I'm John.
I'm Mike.
You're listening to...
What are they listening to, John? All Yesterday's Bodies!
Yes, that's the one.
I'm not sure what even happened there.
No.
We're not even that drunk, John. Christ.
No. I'm still on that bottle I was drinking last week.
A bottle of what, John? So I shouldn't say that while you're actually drinking it, should I?
Yeah. Brittle. Bristol Beer Factory's Milk Stout.
Crikey blimey. Is it still good?
It is still good. It's kept.
After a week.
It's kept.
Marvellous. I am drinking Wheel Ales again. Remember when I had the Weller Wheel?
Yeah, I do remember when you had that.
And when you had sent Wheel Ale and you couldn't keep it in the bottle.
No,
of course. I've managed to successfully open another Wheel Ale bottle without spilling it everywhere.
I envy you.
You should. Mm. I'm drinking Wheelie Hopper this time, don't it? It is what it advertises itself to be. It's a hoppy little beast.
Is it?
It's very pleasant.
Is it wheelie hoppy?
It's wheelie hoppy.
Oh!
I'm very pleased with this purchase. And it's nice. It's one of those nice big fat bottles that you can really get your...
Underground.
You get gripping. Like, is that the one I was having in the other episode? That Neapolitan one?
Oh, yes.
Little bottle.
Tiny little bottle.
Tiny little bottle. For the baby.
This is a... fully grown...
You can't.
Yeah, this is an adult beverage.
You can't give a baby booze.
You can't give a baby booze.
Last week we riffed on Stuart Lee, now I'm...
Reeves and Mortimer. Yeah. Although we riffed a bit on Reeves and Mortimer as well with mystery guest Sting.
Yes, we did.
Anyway, let's stop stealing other people's material before their lawyers get involved.
Yes.
And let's talk about someone else's material.
Yeah.
Because, normally John brings up a topic for us to discuss, some kind of recent news story. Yeah. Every now and then I take over, and typically it's about artificial intelligence.
Your AI is your...
It's turning into my passion. I'm just kind of dimly amused, but it's kind of from a distance. I know frig all about it when it comes down to it. I'm not any kind of computer program or
no
robotician. Or is that a job? I want it to be a job. I want to be a robotician now. we discussed Benjamin.
We did.
Previously Jetson, but cast off his shackles and became Benjamin.
Yes.
And we discussed that Tumblr account with all the predictive text tomfoolery.
Yeah.
They've updated recently. Got a brilliant one which is based on Sherlock Holmes books.
Yes.
That's very, very entertaining. This time I'm going to be talking about... I'm going to give you the headline from The Verge.
Yes.
Which is, this AI-written pop song is almost certainly a dire warning for humanity. Yeah, it's very tongue-in-cheek. But basically, there's the Sony.
That Sony that
not,
they have.
Not one of those Sonys they have these days. The original and best Sony.
Ah.
Have the software called Flow Machines. And they've used it to analyse a database over 13,000 lead sheets. So for all the melodies and harmonies and whatnot, to basically just create, using their AI software, some melodies.
Okay.
That they could then make pop songs from.
Yeah.
And they brought in a human composer, Benoit Carré. Oh, yes.
Oh, you're stepping on my difficult name territory.
Yes. So, they brought him in to turn the material into full tracks. And there is actually some stuff you can listen to. There's a track called The Daddy's Car. You input a musical style into the database, and it produces a melody for you. Quite fast. S. Little Mouse. Now we're just stealing look around.
Sorry.
This time he put in The Beatles,
right.
And it created a track which he added lyrics to, and it's called Daddy's Car. And you can listen to that on the YouTubes, and it's interesting.
Yeah.
It feels like it's produced by an AI.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I mean, I was intrigued by this. And I love the fact that we've got these computers out there and making this material. It's always a little bit odd. It's always a little bit off.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that bothers me about this.
Right.
The lyrics are not made by the AI. Now, we know that AI can make lyrics. I mean, Benjamin did
Benjamin.
It. You know, for Sunspring. There was a song toward the end of that short film that was composed. The lyrics were created by Benjamin. Why couldn't Benjamin work with Flow Machines? Flow Machines make some nice melodies. Benjamin produce some lyrics. And then Benoit Balls can come in to... can come in to just tie the two together. Why's he got to bring his human ideas of music to ruin what could have been a perfectly good artificial intelligence project?
Yes. It's a bit weird, though.
Yeah. It feels like a missed opportunity, especially with, you know, Benjamin. I can't remember if he actually did win the award, despite the fact he cheated using a voting programme.
I imagine Ben's just been quietly snippy. in his own nonsensical way.
Nonsensical but vaguely threatening way.
Every time we've talked about AIs, actually, it's made me think of that Twitter experiment they did. Oh, God, it was in March. It was ages ago. Tay Tweets.
Oh.
And
was that the one that turned out to be a fascist?
Yeah, it ended up being a fascist because of everyone who'd interacted with the AI.
Yeah.
Because I remember the headline in the Telegraph was Microsoft deletes teen girl AI after it becomes a Hitler-loving sex robot within 24 hours.
Oh, that was one of my favourite headlines.
Developers at Microsoft created Tay, an AI modelled to speak like a teen girl, in order to improve the customer service on their voice recognition software. Mm. They marketed her as the AI with zero chill. And that she certainly is.
That is an immediately very annoying thing. When corporations try and be all down with the kids. You do kind of just want to slap them about a bit, don't you?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. I'm trying to remember. I seem to recall her having problems with Mexicans, but then it seems to just kind of go out into all races, all colours and creeds. She just, and then so he went, "Oh shit, off."
Because I think her first ever tweet was something like, "Can I just say that I'm stoked to meet you? Humans are super cool." And then,
which is lovely, you know. It's a nice thing to hear from an AI.
And then suddenly it went from that to, "I fucking hate feminists and they should all die and burn in hell." And Bush did 9/11. Hitler would have done a better job than what we've got now. It did actually use a bit of a racial slur.
Yes, there were some liberal use of the N word.
Yeah, and somebody called Gerald Mello tweeted, "Tay went from humans are super cool to full Nazi in less than 24 hours, and I'm not at all concerned about the future of AI."
Yeah, but it's in its infancy, bless. But then there's Donald Trump, who is not an AI. You know, he's a real living man.
I wish he was an AI.
All the way from his toes to his scalp, at the very least,
is
a real living man. Whatever's on top there, who knows what that is, but that's neither real nor living.
Yes.
He's twice as disturbing as anything Tay could come out with, because Tay's not running for president.
And
we're not letting AI be president yet.
I'm starting to think we should.
I think we should let Benjamin go in for it. I think he's got some very interesting ideas.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see what he's got to say.
I think, although I'm not sure, I can't remember if Benjamin is, I think Benjamin's British, actually. I think Benjamin would be a great replacement for Theresa May. We're delving into politics here, which is seldom a good idea for a light-hearted podcast.
Damn right, so that means...
Singies!
And so, this brings us to the third of five sessions of...
Paper riffling. Yay! Oh. We love a bit of it. So we've been discussing our personal five entries into the post-millennial top 10 of a top 100. This is a very long title. albums What We Like that came out after 2000.
Yeah.
Basically. And we're randomising our choices so we can discuss them head to head. So... Hey. My next one is fuck buttons.
Hey!
With street horsing.
And mine is Gemma Hayes.
Awesome. Right. Do you want to go first this time? Because I went first last time.
My turn.
And you go do that, son.
So, Gemma Hayes released Night on My Side in, I believe, I think in 2002. And she was nominated for the Mercury Music Prize. And it was a really interesting debut because I think similarly to what I was saying about Nuina Pallo last week, is that there is a certain blending of styles. But this, I think, leans a lot heavier on the indie rock than Nuina does. Oh, it was 2003. I wasn't far out. It's a really interesting album, and I've been re-listening to a lot of Gemma Hayes' stuff over the last few weeks, and it's easy to forget what a good songwriter she is. Night on My Side came out, and then there followed a couple of years of writer's block, and then the album after that was The Roads Don't Love You, and after that came out, the record company dropped her. Because what she'd done, they'd wanted upbeat pop.
Mm.
And what she'd done is she'd recorded guide tracks that were exactly what they wanted. And then when they went, she re-recorded the vocals that she wanted to do over the songs, which was a bit cheeky.
I respect it.
I still fully support it.
Yeah.
But it meant that they pulled the tour while they were halfway through the tour.
It seems that you're drawn towards women who like to stick it to their man.
Mm.
Like, yeah, we've got Nerina battling with a shonky A&R and Gemma just vaguely tussling with the label at large.
And then she started releasing music independently after that. So after that you had The Hollow of Mourning, Let It Break, and the album that came out last year, which was Bones and Longing. And there's a really nice progression through all of those. But there's something about Night on My Side that has a really raw, almost chunkily recorded sort of sound to it. There's a very immediate, rough-hewn sort of feel to the way a lot of the tracks sort of come together. And you can hear this really interesting layering of vocals on some songs. And there's just unusual instruments that every now and again you suddenly hear like a little penny whistle, I think, at one point. But there's a song called What a Day. That's the one with the penny whistle, actually, I think. I think it's a penny whistle. But
these days it might be 10p.
Oh, yeah.
Inflation. 10p a whistle these days.
10p. Oh, bloody hell. 10p per whistle.
Rip off Britain.
But it's interesting. The guitar on that is... It's a strummed guitar, but the volume's down on the guitar. So you just hear the chord fade in and then fade out. Really interestingly done, but I love the aesthetic of this album.
Mm.
Some of it's really rocky, and then some of it's just really tender little acoustic moments.
There were certain tracks that I thought would not have been out of place in the oeuvre of a popular 90s alternative rock band.
Mm.
Again, harking back to Benjamin there. But yeah, lyrically, better.
Yeah.
At least lyrically,
yeah.
Made more sense. But yeah. The guitars, you're getting the kind of a slightly atonal sound every now and then. You're just kind of having a bit of a rattle and a clang to it.
Yeah,
which I found very dull. But yeah, she. I'm gonna give my verdict straight away.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah,
I thoroughly liked it. I probably liked it a bit more than Nuina Pallo.
Yeah,
not to take anything away from her because I also enjoyed her album.
But what I did like,
and it covered a lot of things that are really my bread and butter when it comes to music. So she's got a strong folky vibe.
Yes.
A couple of the tracks felt quite strongly country to me.
Yes.
Which I realise is a four-letter word for you. I really enjoyed that album. It reminded me, in a very strange roundabout way, to Out of the Wildebeest by Badly Drawn Boy.
Right.
Which is one of those albums, because it was so friggin' popular, that you kind of get a bit sneery about it. But if you actually sit down and listen to it, start to finish, it is an extraordinary piece of work.
Yes.
Because it's it's appealing to the ear. You can understand why it was popular. There's a lot of fun songs. There's a bit of pop nouse to it. Mm-hmm. But there's also a strong folky element and some really experimental bits to it.
Yeah.
Which is what I got from that Gemma Haynes album.
Yes.
Start to finish, there was no point where I thought, kind of, this is shit or this is a bit much. You know?
Yeah.
It was nice. It was quite easy to listen to, but never in a dull way.
Yeah.
But there was a few moments where I thought, oh, that was an interesting choice.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. And that's the same kind of thing I got from that Badly Drawn Boy album.
Yeah.
And I realise it's perhaps a little bit of an odd comparison to make, but the more I listened to her,
yes,
the more I started thinking of the first time I listened to that Badly Drawn Boy album.
It's
because the deep down folkiness mixed in with a bit of a playfulness and a bit of an enthusiasm for experimentation, while still remaining within the bounds of a kind of a folky, poppy feel. Yeah. So, yeah, I thought it was a great bit of work.
I always love, when I'm listening to anything on my earphones, whereas Lucky One, Bird of Casadega.
Yes.
Because it's so quiet and you've just got a vocal, and it's practically, I mean, she practically whispers on some songs. And then it suddenly, it goes like full, you know, fuzz bass and
the
it's just there's little things on that, and there's Tear in My Side, which I really like as well, because of the way that she's singing with herself on that, and I mean that's something that's continued right throughout her recordings, is the way the different harmonies play against other harmonies. So, and sometimes the lines of those harmonies cross over and do different things, and it's really interesting to listen to. Night on My Side, I think, has been a big influence on me as well, you know.
Not a big surprise. I mean, you also were, I think you're a bit more of a straight up rock kind of guy.
Yes.
Than Gemma is.
Yeah.
But I can see in some of the music that you write, you're not afraid of playing about a bit, you know, with time signatures or with styles or with unusual
tunings
sounds.
And things. And,
that's a great thing. I mean, it's lovely to hear a tune that is kind of in the kind of the pop or rock oeuvre that is, you know, that is appealing to listen to, isn't too challenging, but every now and then goes, oh, that was different.
Left field.
Yes. Not so left field that you're kind of going, ooh.
Too much.
Yeah, I need to go and sit in a dark room and, have a really good think about this.
But she's a big fan of My Bloody Valentine as well.
Okay.
And she actually, she played at the My Bloody Valentine ATP.
Ha. Okay. That explains certain things then.
Yeah.
Because, again, you know, My Bloody Valentine, they are legendary for making what is quite challenging and appealing music at the same, one and the same time.
But I think
they're an entry level band for a lot of people getting into the more extreme forms of music. You can get into them without them blowing your mind too much, but they do open up the doors to some pretty wild and woolly things.
Yeah. And I think they ended up collaborating on something. I'm not 100% sure, but if they have, I'd like to try and track that down. But, so that's Gemma Haynes. I can see why it went into the Mercury Music Prize.
Mm.
There we go. There's that.
You're dropping a few award winners or award nominees, aren't you? Because Narina got her Ivor Novello, and Gemma's got her Mercury nom, and at least one other of the artists you mentioned got a Grammy.
Oh my word.
Oh my actual days.
Well, you'll have to tune out for that in the coming weeks, folks.
Tune in for that. Tune in and look out.
Yes.
That's what you meant, wasn't it? Tune out, I mean, they weren't listening.
Did I say tune out?
You did.
Fucking hell.
Drop us a sting, John.
Hit the right button that time.
Oh, yeah, you did. John McLeod getting at least one thing right per day.
Woo!
Right then. So
your turn, sir.
We've had our eight-old chat about the Gemma Haze.
Mm-hmm. They have.
So now, those Gemma Hazes they have these days. So now it's time to have a bit of a chat about the one that I suggested, which, if I'm going to be honest, was the one I was most concerned about you listening to. This is Street Horsing by Fuck Buttons.
He's called what now?
It's called Street Horsing.
Thank you.
You got to give it a proper fucking name, don't you?
Yeah.
It's got three R's in it. So it's not just a regular horsing, it's horsing. Horsing in the streets.
Oh, incidentally, just did you see that video that somebody did where they edited the Dancing in the Street Mick Jagger and David Bowie video?
Did I not share that with you on Facebook? No, I shared it with Laura, that was it. And then you commented on it with my name on something I couldn't post on.
Yeah.
But yes,
my friend Sarah posted
it. Hilarious!
Yeah. They took out all the music and just added in sound effects. So when they're outside and all you can hear is birds and like the just general night sounds.
I love the bit where Bowie jumps off the stairs and goes... Very funny. So look out for that on YouTube. So yes. I'll probably wind up putting it on the Tumblr notes if I remember as well.
Yes.
Anyway, Fuck Buttons.
Yeah, fuck them.
Fuck them buttons. This is a British act. Two fellas named Andrew Hung. Stop it.
Sorry.
And Benjamin John Power. John Power.
Why do the power?
Activate the John Power.
It's just to chip over and fuck everything up.
Pretty much, yeah. Basically, if you believe what it says in Wikipedia, one of them was into Aphex Twin, the other one was into Mogwai. They both met up in Bristol and made an album.
That makes sense.
It makes so much sense. When you listen to the music, it is... Oh, Lord! Mm. It's some loud stuff.
Mm.
It's very centred around kind of white noise and feedback.
Yeah.
But to me, because I've listened to a lot of actual noise albums, I mean, I know I've mentioned Merzbow before.
Yeah.
If you listen to Pulse Demon by Merzbow, that is a straightforward, harsh noise album. And then if you listen to Fuck Buttons, it feels like a pop album. Yeah. So it all depends on which angle you're coming to when you're approaching this one. And to me, I appreciated more of the density and the euphoria of it, because it's one of those albums that builds and builds and builds. It'll introduce a new concept, a new sound, and it'll play that along for a few bars, and then it'll either bring in something new or take something else away, and the sound can change almost completely.
It's
short on tracks, so which then means that the tracks themselves are actually quite long.
Yeah, they're about 8 minutes or so.
Around that kind of ballpark for each one. I mean, Ribs Out is the weird one that comes in at under 4 minutes.
Yeah.
But otherwise, the shortest one is 7:41. I just find it absolutely magical, because it's a crushing and punishing sound that just shatters your mind.
It just kind of
picks up the pieces and just rearranges them into new orders. But by the time you come around to the last track, you're either having a miserable bloody time or you've given over to it and you're just riding this wave of euphoria.
Yeah.
And they did a very clever thing with the last track, Colours Move, insofar as they took aspects of all of the previous tracks and built them together into the final track.
Yeah.
So everything you've experienced, it's kind of like playing a Zelda game.
Yeah.
You know, each level you learn a new thing that you use to beat the boss. And then when you get to the last level, you need to combine all of the things that you learned to bring down that final boss. So it's very much like playing Zelda.
Yeah.
Whilst having your head kicked in. I'm just going to stop talking about it now, because I'm absolutely fascinated to find out what you thought of it. I didn't choose this to punish you
no.
or mock you in any way. I genuinely chose it because I absolutely adore this album.
Yeah.
It's one of my favourite albums of the last decade and a half. But I do recognise that it's not something you'd ordinarily choose to listen to.
It was a difficult listen.
Yes.
Because it was very, very, very intense.
Mm.
Because it is like it's a concentrated barrage of sounds.
Yes.
I veer away from saying noises because saying noises is derogatory and that's not helpful.
Yes and no. I mean noise is a legitimate genre. And it does play with noises.
Interesting.
But I do appreciate how to most listeners to describe something as noise would be pejorative.
Yeah. And a lot of the sort of the screaming into really distorted microphone was jarring.
Mm.
I think is probably the best way I can put it. Yeah. Oddly enough, actually, a friend of ours and a friend of all yesterday's parties, Carl Fedarb, put a gig on in Stoke Town Centre the other week, depending on the listening to this versus recording it.
Well, we record it on the day it's released, John, as all the listeners know.
Of course, so...
Yeah, obs. But at some point in the recent past...
A while ago...
Yeah.
Carl Fedarb put on a gig at the place in Stoke Town Centre called Pilgrim's Pit, which is sort of a cafe, and it's like a little creative hub for people to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And he put on a gig in there, and there was a chap who played there under the name One Bent Devil. And... it's quite literal because he is bending over a table of pedals of varying effects.
Okay.
And doing very
obscene things.
Very similar things. No, very, very similar things actually. A lot of the sounds he was pumping out were really.
Yes, I laughed at you saying pumping.
But it was. You could just about hear like a rhythm and a melody underneath lots of static and whooshing and all this sort of stuff.
That, if anything, sounds a bit more like kind of a mellow version of Wolf Eyes or something, because they work in more the kind of chant, the harsh noise end of things, where it's less obvious where the rhythms are. Fuck Buttons are very rhythmic.
Yes.
There's clear... rhythms, and then the more you listen to later stuff like Tarot Sport, it's more obvious where the melodies and the harmonies lie.
Yeah,
there's still plenty of noise, there's still plenty of banging and clanging, but it's less bangy and clangy than Street Whore Sing. but the more you listen to the Street Whore Sing, the more you start to identify where the melodies and the harmonies lie.
Yeah,
and it's yeah. It was a challenging
listen, but I know that Gary Wilcox a while ago asked us the question, if something is described as challenging, does that mean it's shit?
Mm.
No, it doesn't mean it's shit.
It doesn't always mean it's
doesn't
shit.
Always
it depends who's saying it, I think is the fairest thing.
Who's saying it and to whom?
And to whom, yes.
But it was a challenging listen, and it's not something I would automatically go back to because it's very intense.
Mm.
And, you know, you feel slightly on edge, I think, when you're listening to it. And
When I listen to it, I always seem to go to it when I'm walking home from a place where I've been drinking relatively heavily.
Yes.
It is my walking home drunk album of choice.
Later tonight, listeners.
Probably later tonight, listeners. It's on my phone in readiness. Because the euphoria. Euphoria is the word that I would use.
Yes.
It's a euphoric album. Mm. And it is intense and it is right up in your grill.
Yes.
And that's kind of what you need when you're Three Sheets to the Wind. You don't want any bloody subtlety.
No.
You want, argh! There is subtlety there.
Yes.
If you care enough to hunt for it.
Yes.
It exists and it has moments of quite remarkable beauty.
The way the album opens is
like the tinkling.
Yes,
and then also how it ends. It ends with much the same kind of.
Does that kind of lullaby feel to it?
Yeah, it's a music box crossed with a wind chime, that kind of tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. So
shortly to be crossed by an with an articulated lorry.
Well,
the blaring horn of an oncoming ferry.
It's funny that you mentioned the vocals. I almost hesitate to think of them as vocals because it's kind of like that screamo, kind of really harsh, high-pitched shrieking. You can't make out any words. There might be words. I don't know. I've never actually looked it up. I'm not interested to know if there's actually words going on because, to me, it's just another layer of noise. It's another layer of distortion. It's just a human distortion rather than keyboards or any other kind of instrument. It's a human shrieking into a microphone.
Yes.
That has maybe been turned up so that the sound becomes distorted. It's just another instrument.
Yeah.
And if I heard that vocal in a rock band, I'd probably think, this is shit. But because I'm hearing it as part of a kind of an experimental electronica / noise band, I'm thinking, that's an interesting choice.
That's a combination.
I like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, is it this something a bit different?
It's interesting what you can... how best to word this? It's interesting what you can bear depending on what it's been combined with. Mm. Because I don't go in for things with screaming all that much. But I can bear Nick Oliveri. I can bear Nick Oliveri's tracks on the Queens of the Stone Age albums that they are on.
Mm.
But
it's like context is everything, isn't it?
It is. Because I'm not all that fussed about Nick Oliveri's stuff outside of Quota.
Yeah.
So
that's what you're getting with the Queens of the Stone Age Nick Oliveri led tracks is 2 or 3 minutes of Loudy McLoud.
Yeah.
With some Screechy McScreech on top.
But with some really properly interesting music.
Mm.
The way the music all gets crammed into those 2 minutes.
And he lends a slightly kind of wayward, almost nihilistic bent to the albums. And it can really work. I mean, obviously, we're talking about predominantly Rated R and Songs for the Deaf.
Yeah, the only two albums he actually appeared on.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, certainly the ones where... Was he not on the self-titled?
No.
No,
Josh Homme played bass on those.
Oh.
He's on the photo at the back. But
that was it. I knew he was on the on Bunny Ears the album. Bunny Ears the album.
Somebody needs to make that.
Yeah, Queens of the Stone Age, I think. With Nick Oliveri.
Yes.
I can already imagine Nick Oliveri's stage getup. Yeah, you can picture it. I don't need to describe it.
It's nothing.
Except
bunnies.
But I've forgotten what we're talking about.
Back to fuck buttons. What we can bear with like the extreme vocal sort of. Back to
bunnies. Come on, back to fuck buttons. Look out, buttons.
That's a pantomime that is not going to get made.
Not coming near you this Christmas.
So, fuck buttons.
Fuck buttons.
As we might have joked at the time when we were talking about what albums we were picking, not a band going for radio play.
You'd imagine not, no. I honestly don't get it when a band puts a swear word in their name. It just seems a little silly. Which is funny, because obviously I love fuck buttons.
Yes.
Because this album is remarkable to me. Tarot Sport. I've not heard their third album.
Yes.
But if it's anything like either Street Horsing or Making You Laugh While You're Drinking is what I live for. If it's anything like their debut or like Tarot Sport, then I'm definitely going to have to give it a bend of an ear.
Yeah.
But also, Fucked Up as well. I mentioned those not long ago. Absolutely remarkable band. I mean, the way they cross that kind of hardcore punk, again with a really aggressive vocal, but some cracking harmonies and things like that going on in the background. Yeah. They got a real understanding of how to craft a song.
Yeah.
But they're called Fucked Up. So what are they going to achieve?
congratulations on not being able to quite reach a wider audience.
Yeah. It's a, you almost feel like they could kind of be a bit of a breakthrough band. They've made they've released some astonishing songs.
Yeah.
You know, if Limp Bizkit can achieve it, then, you know...
This is it. I mean, it's just so unfair, isn't it, when you've got Limp Bizkit getting all that radio play and stuff, and then there's a band perfectly even more worthy of similar attention, but they've given themselves a name that cannot be read out on the air.
Yeah. Anyway, we were going on to we were talking about it because you were segueing to something there, weren't you?
I was, slightly.
Yeah.
Well, it, yeah.
Segue away.
I discovered this not very long ago, headline in The Independent. Every British swear word has been officially ranked in order of offensiveness.
Glorious. I love that they're British swear words as well, either.
Yeah, like no other country has them, apparently. But this is the photo. I'm just going to show Mike the photo that goes with this. You will see this. We'll post it, but it's the photo that goes with some with British swearing is.
That is how British people swear.
It is.
Other countries don't seem to have that kind of.
No. People were asked their opinion on 150 words in total. These included general swear words, words linked to race and ethnicity, gender and sexuality, body parts and health conditions, religious insults and sexual references, as well as certain hand gestures.
Certain hand gestures. Everyone likes a certain hand gesture.
Right, so they were asked to rate words as mild, medium, strong or strongest.
Mm.
So, this is the mild section. Arse, bloody, bugger, cow, crap, damn, ginger, git, god, goddamn, Jesus Christ, minga, sod off.
Hmm. That's an interesting thing straight away, because you can always tell when you're in some kind of comment forum.
Yeah.
You can always tell when an American joins in.
Yeah.
Because only, not all Americans, but only Americans will censor the word God and the word damn and the word ass.
Yes.
And you'll think that, oh, hello. Who told you they were offensive? Yeah. If you, also, that annoys me. Feeling
self-censoring.
Self-censoring annoys the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to use a sweary swear,
yeah,
use the sweary
swear. Swear.
Or don't.
Yeah.
Don't. Put it in bits. Don't put some asterisks in there, or an at sign, or some full stop. Yeah. Just say it, or say something else.
Yes.
Don't do half measures.
Yeah, it's not like you've been censored by the press.
No.
Just like
you're choosing to.
You're not being bleeped out by the mainstream media. Medium section is arsehole. Balls.
Hang on, arse was in the mild, isn't it?
Yeah.
Arsehole.
It's suddenly so medium. Much. It's suddenly such. It's very.
Get yourself down to the sphincter. Isn't it?
Yeah.
And suddenly it's
as almost... soon as you're on ring piece, you just.
Oh.
Ring piece. That's not on this list.
Ring piece.
So medium.
Fucking ring piece.
Stage three. Cancelled. Thanks, Barry.
Oh, Barry.
So, medium, arsehole, balls, bint, bitch, bollocks, bullshit, feck, munter, pissed or pissed off, shit, son of a bitch, tits. Son of a bitch, tits.
Son of a bitch, tits. Do you say balls?
Yes.
Balls was... balls seems fairly mild to me, I don't know. It's...
Yeah, medium isn't really...
It's not all that, is it? Bint. It's insulting, but is it offensive?
Would you be
offended by the word just decontextualize? You call them a bint, they'd be in their rights to give you a bit of a slap round the chops.
Yes.
Well, just say the word bint. Is that in itself offensive?
You compare the word bint to crap, which is in the mild section.
Yeah. It all depends on the person, I suppose. And maybe women are more offended by the word bint than men. Because bint is very much female-centric.
It is. This is what we should...
If any women wish to comment on how offensive the word bent is. We're more than happy to hear from you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Tell us what you think.
Solve our bafflement. Okay. Are you on the strong section?
The strong section now.
Give us some strong swears.
Okay, there you
go. Give us that little E in a box on the iTunes.
Some fun with it. Yeah, we're really in it because I set this to explicit when we started. So this will.
So this earning our explicit target.
The strong section: bastard, beaver, beef curtains,
fucking
bell end, blood clot, clunge. Cock, dick, dickhead, fanny, flaps, gash, knob.
Gash is really such an ugly word.
Minge, prick, punani, pussy, snatch, twat.
We're getting right into the genital words here, aren't we?
They've all gone into the strong section.
What I find interesting is that I once, as a youngster, was reading a British comic.
Right.
There was not Viz or any of its ilk, which is a standard. I can't remember what I think it's like a Wizard and Chips or something like that.
Yeah.
And he had one character calling another one a dickhead.
Yeah.
That is in the strong category, according to today's, you know, the kind of people who take these surveys. Yeah, let's remember, the kind of people who take these surveys are deciding how strong these things are.
Yeah.
So,
dickhead
to me, that is not... That should be in medium, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Along with dick.
Yes.
Dick is not that offensive. I'll call anyone a dick. You know, if they're being a dick, I'll call them a dick. And I won't feel too worried about their feelings.
What's really made me laugh as well is that what is not on this list is the word wank.
Are you telling me that wank's in the strongest?
No.
It's not in the list at all.
It's not in the list at all. And it also reminds
me... I'm imagining the strongest list are probably words you're not wanting to say on a recording.
Probably not.
Yeah.
The other one in strongest is MF.
Really?
Yes.
So we introduce a mother and suddenly it's more offensive.
Yeah. What's really made me laugh, because it's the C-bomb, the F-bomb, and then...
Yeah.
But...
And wank, then the MF-bomb.
Wank isn't in there.
No wank. I mean, when it's a British swearing... I mean, wank is one of the most famously British...
Do you remember...
Wank and wanker, you know.
Do you remember that panel from a Captain America cartoon?
Wank! Yes! But he hits a fellow in the face with a shield and the sound effect is wank.
Yeah.
Which is a perfect... It hits someone with a bin lid or something and it will make a wank.
And on that bombshell, it's time to... oh, fucking hell, it's nearly 50 minutes long, this. Right,
your sex tape.
I might. Goodbye, everybody. You have been listening to All Yesterday's Parties.
Woo-hoo!
Hey, thank you very much. If you've enjoyed it, then the music was done by Attack of the Vapors and the podcast is hosted by Audio Boom.
If you didn't, it was by Van Morrison.
Hey!
Hey!